You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
A great game seven on Sunday night at the Garden. 7 o'clock, the puck drops. So exciting there for the Rangers, of course. I believe that the story is Shesterkin. 31 saves last night and coming into game seven. And how defining of a game that is for a lot of careers, especially when you look at Lundqvist, right? Lundqvist 4-0 in game sevens to seal the deal at the Garden. So much is because we saw him struggle in games three and four. Those are the games that, of course, we saw the Rangers lose. And so he has bounced back the last two games. So now, of course, they've won two. And it sets up a game seven for the Rangers. We'll dive into that. We'll take your calls, 800-919-3776. I'd love to hear from Rangers fans. Your thoughts, your expectations for them on Sunday night. Are you going to go to the game? Are you going to go to the Garden? That's exciting. That's another thing. And by the way, we've got Ty and Jake, who are producing the show, back in the studio. I'm a little under the weather today, so they're going to be more active and attractive than normal. But, you know, gentlemen, that's another question for our listeners out there. You know, we've got, and when you look along the landscape of, in regard to what's going on in the NHL, right, you've got seven game sevens that are taking place. So that's exciting. The parity right now in the postseason in the NHL, we've got a game seven that's taking place in the NBA as well, with the Celtics and the Bucks, in the Mavs and the Suns. That's exciting. But, you know, you hear it time and time again, right? There's nothing more exciting than a NHL Game 7 on the ice. You agree or disagree with that?
We had a caller on the Rothenberg Show basically say that there's no better live event than a hockey game. And with playoff hockey, that that whole atmosphere just gets kind of lifted to a whole nother level. So, I don't know. I mean, out of the four major sports, hockey is my least favorite. But when you're in person at a hockey game, especially a playoff hockey game, there really is nothing like it.
Now, I've never been to a playoff hockey game. I have been to a hockey game. I have been to the Garden to see the Rangers play. But again, you know, 800-919-3776. What what is it? I guess my question as well is, you know, what is it about a hockey game seven that makes it more exciting, more thrilling than an NBA game seven, right?
I guess it's because in an NBA game seven, at least my dad always says, you really only have to watch like the last quarter or 5 minutes of a game to really get the true story. And of course, if it's a blowout in the last 5 minutes, it's a 20-point game, then yes, you miss the game. But for the most part with basketball, with there being so much action, you don't necessarily have to watch or live by every single basket that gets scored. But in a hockey game, it could be a 1-0 game going, you know, overtime. It could be 0-0 going into overtime. So every single goal, every single play, every fan is living and dying by.
Yeah, I agree with that. Like an NBA game, like you're getting consistent scoring on both ends. And you know how much I love basketball, but there's just so much more anxiety, you know, from opening faceoff in a hockey event, because runs are at a premium. And, you know, it's similar to baseball, where there are not a lot of runs going to be scored in a game seven in theory. But the difference is, in baseball, that's more of a slower pace. Like, you can have that in the background, come back. Hockey, it's like you just don't want to miss a minute, because there's like action just consistently for 60 minutes. So even if it's so funny, like I'm watching, it was game one, I believe. Yeah, it was game one, the triple overtime game. And, you know, I root for the Rangers just because it's good for the station. But I felt, like, tremendous anxiety. And I had to look myself in the mirror. I'm like, what are you doing? Like, this doesn't really affect you that much. Like, this is going to have no bearing on your life whatsoever. But any person watching a hockey game, whether or not you're rooting for the team, that teams that are playing or not, you just feel that, like, that anxious feeling, because it's just so much happening all at once, and at any moment the game can change.
So let's break down last night's game. Again, the Rangers win 5-3. Shesterkin with 31 saves. Again, not a great performance in game 3 and 4, but definitely stepped up in game 5 and 6. Big reason why they are where they are right now. Also, maybe I've buried the lead here, and that is Sidney Crosby. Of course, he did not play. Not sure if you guys are aware of this. This is the first playoff game that Sidney Crosby has missed in 5 years. And of course, we know the Penguins are always in it to win it each and every season. So that's huge. I know prior to me coming on the Dave Rothenberg show, you had some breaking news that I guess Sidney Crosby is practicing today. So he is on the ice. No confirmation whether or not he's going to be active and attractive Sunday night at the Garden. But obviously, that has been the difference maker as well. You know what you get with Sidney Crosby, right? Like, he's the number one. Malkin is the number two. And so now, you know, elevate, and there really isn't a number two, let's be honest. And I've had Greg Wyshynski on a few of the shows that I've hosted and filled in over the week, and I've been asking him, what's standing out in regard to this Penguins team? And a lot of it is Sidney Crosby feels like, you know, this is the last swan song for the group of guys that are on that roster. There's going to be a number of free agents that are going to be leaving the Penguins, and they're older, and it's a team that needs to push the reset button pretty soon, if not starting next year, and start getting younger. And so there's a lot of question marks in regards to the future of the organization and the franchise and who Sidney Crosby is going to be playing with. And so that's extra motivation to try to lengthen this season, to make sure that there's another series in front. So he's playing with added motivation. We're going to hear from Gallant in just a second. He was really, really thrilled, not only with Shesterkin's performance last night, but also offensively. This was a Rangers team that delivered. Kind of nervous early, right? Pittsburgh went up 2-0. Then in the second quarter, Rangers 3-1. So now it's tied 3-3. And then, of course, in the third quarter, 2-0 Rangers. Shesterkin did not allow a goal. And also, keep in mind, when you look at the power plays, Pittsburgh 0-3 on their power play, which is almost a little under 2 minutes. The Rangers were 2-for-3. So that was a really big key. Rodriguez, of course, really emotional, really, really physical, got the penalty, and of course, advantage Rangers in that regard. Here's another trend that I came across that's interesting. Get this, guys. The Penguins, 6-0 all time in Game 7s on the road. So marinate that for a minute. The Pittsburgh Penguins are 6-0 all time, unbeaten Game 7s on the road. Trends are there for a reason. So this is going to be a really crucial game. Obviously, so much emphasis is going to be on whether or not Sidney Crosby is going to be able to suit up and play. I think this is a defining moment for Shesterkin's career. You know, Game 7s, especially at the Garden, you know, you win that, you get one of those under your belt. He has an unbelievable performance, possibly puts up over 30 saves again. That's a defining moment in his career. And I love what Gallant said. He said, home ice matters, especially in Game 7, no less at the Garden.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
Let's go to Joe in Long Island. Joe, you're up. Welcome in.
Hey, Anita, thanks. I was going to say about Game 6 quickly. Not only was Shesterkin playing the way we expected him to based on all season, but also you let in with the clip of Zibanejad. A lot of the Rangers' top players those first few games weren't the ones that were showing up. It was the young kids, even in the win. So thankfully, they all woke up, it seems, and things seem to be trending in the right direction. One other thing about the going into Game 7 that's given me confidence, the Ming, Pittsburgh goalie, I don't know how much history you know, third-string guy, mostly minor league career. Hopefully, maybe, you know, all these games in a row is finally getting to him, maybe a little fatigue. That glass goal that he gave up was obviously a little soft with that deflection bouncing over him. So I'm feeling pretty confident about the Rangers. Like you said, nothing like a Game 7 in the Garden, and hopefully Shesterkin will follow in the footsteps of Hank and bring it on home. Because if he doesn't,
Joe,
I'll tell you what, Dave Rothenberg said it this morning earlier, I would have rather they just lost out in Game 5 than come all the way back to lose Game 7, because it'll be pretty much soul-crushing as a Ranger fan if they don't. I have a good amount of confidence in them, so let's go Rangers.
I'm curious to get your take on this, Joe, because I feel like, you know, for a guy like Shesterkin, especially the history here with Lundqvist and the magic of the Garden, you know, how significant, I think it's uber significant for him to win game seven. I think it's career defining.
I mean, he's still young. He's got a long career. It'll, you know, I mean, he'll have time to recover, I think, if he loses. But if he wins it, I think the legend is already, you know, I think the win will put him in the legendary status. I mean, the season he had, being up for the Hart Trophy and the Vezina Trophy, both in the same season. I mean, you cap that off with this Game 7 win, you're pretty much in the pantheon even at that early an age. I mean, you know, you have to hopefully cap it off with a cup that Hank even, unfortunately, could never do, which was a travesty in and of itself. But I think a loss, it'll hurt, but I don't think it'll – I think he's still young enough that he'll have time to make that up. But the win, I definitely think, will, like, elevate him to –
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Some insane status. I mean, because like I said, just based on the season he's already had and to recover from those two awful games that he had in 3 and 4, I mean, if you come back and win the game 7, I agree. I mean, it'll be a lot that he'll already have done at a very early stage of his career. So,
Joe, thanks for the phone call. Appreciate it. You know, obviously so much riding on Shesterkin and this Rangers offense, but let's be honest. I think the bigger story here, and we've seen it, is how active and attractive Sidney Crosby is he going to be? You know, it is game 7. It's that defining game. You know, at what point will he play? At 75%, 80%? How effective will he be? Because when he's been on the ice, Pittsburgh has dominated. So again, you guys produce Dave's show. So
I have the tweet. So it's at Penn's Inside Scoop. Michelle Chiriolo, who's the Penguins team reporter, verified 114,000 followers. She tweeted out about 20 minutes ago that Sidney Crosby is currently on the ice for the Pittsburgh Penguins practice. So not great news for Rangers fans if you were expecting Crosby to kind of miss out on this game 7, but this morning, about 20 minutes ago, as we reported, Sidney Crosby is on the ice. So not great news for Rangers fans.
No. So we'll see what happens. We'll stay on top of that. And again, a really exciting game 7 at the Garden. Hopefully you got tickets. Kudos to you. There's a lot going on here, by the way, in New York this week. It's not just the Rangers. Rangers hosting that game 7, which obviously is the biggest ticket in town, I'm sure. But you've got the women, the LPGA, and they're teeing it up. They're playing out there at Upper Montclair Country Club at the Cognizant Founders Cup. So that's a great event if you're heading out there. Weather conditions are supposed to be nice tomorrow, so that's fun. You got the Rangers at home at the Garden tomorrow as well. And let's talk some Major League Baseballs. The Yankees going up against the White Sox. They win yet again last night, 10-4. So I was on our ESPN's gambling digital show called Bet, and one of my best bets, one of my plays in Major League Baseball last night was the Yankees over 4.5 team total points. And I mean, they crushed that. They got to that immediately. This is a Yankees team. Boy, I tell you, it's really interesting because if you've been listening to me for the last few years, one of my biggest criticisms with Brian Cashman is, and I still believe this, okay, so I'm really intrigued on how I think the season is going to play out. And I truly believe you need at least two aces in your rotation to win a World Series. My opinion. But, you know, that has not been the formula as Cashman has been putting a lot of emphasis, a lot of money wherever the Yankees do spend money on the lineup, not necessarily the rotation. Now, the rotation has out, let's be honest, the rotation has outperformed so far this season, right? Cortez, Severino, you kind of had an expectation of Gerrit Cole coming in. He's 3-0 so far in the season. Last night, he pitched a little over six innings, gave up 3 runs, 6 hits, 9 strikeouts. He's been great. Seems like he's turned the corner in regard to what we saw last season when they stopped allowing the starting pitchers to use whatever sticky stuff they were using. But you've got Stanton and Judge. And Ty, you sent me an email today. The Yankees are 20-1 when both Stanton and Judge homer in the same game.
I believe that actually went up to 21-1. I should have corrected that. But now 21-1 because they both homered last night. And this is like when you put the team together a couple of years ago when you added Stanton to this lineup, this is what you envision. You know, that people are calling them the Bash Brothers. Unfortunately for them is you haven't been able to have Judge and Stanton sustain their health throughout a season. But the last 2 years, they've been pretty dominant and high-powering this Yankee offense. You just hope it could continue into October because that's ultimately how you're going to judge this team. As good as they are now, the runs become at a premium once they get to the postseason because you face, you know, elite pitching and the quality of at-bats, it becomes tougher. So once they get to October, if these guys can continue to hit the way they are, you know, I don't see why they can't go on a run.
And to hop off of Ty's back, this start has been incredible, and Yankees fans should be enjoying it. Of course, if they go out in the first round of the playoffs and lose, all of it will not be that great. But realistically, you have to enjoy the ride, and this is one of their best starts in team history. Through 32 games, they've only reached 24 wins 4 other times, 1928, 1939, 1958, and 1998, and all 4 of those times they ended up winning the World Series. So, if you're looking at things like that, the Yankees are in great shape, and he just mentioned Judge and Stanton lighting it up, home runs pretty much, it seems like, every game, but Judge and Stanton joined Ruth and Gehrig and Mantle and Barra as the only pair of teammates in Yankees history to have 10-plus homers in 32 games, so pretty nice company to be in.
Wow, wow, wow. And again, the Yankees 21-1 with both Stanton and Judge hit a homer in the same game. Stanton has 3 straight games with a home run. Judge has 2. Josh Donaldson has 2. Gallo got some action yesterday as well. So today, later on tonight, 7 o'clock, Montgomery on, as I like to call it, the bump for the Yankees. 0-1 with a 2.90 ERA, and they're going up against Keuchel, who has struggled against the Yankees. So yet again, I'm all over this Yankees team. I'll play the Yankees on the money line. I'll also take the over in team total runs.
And it's
tonight
funny. It's funny,
as well.
You mentioned we said Judge and Stanton, then you went off. Donaldson's been heating up. You know, Gleyber's been better. LeMahieu's been good. Anthony Rizzo was the guy the first couple of weeks that everyone was talking about, and he's one of the leaders in home runs too. He has 9, but he actually hasn't hit one in more than 2 weeks. He's actually batting 132 over the last 2 weeks, but luckily for him, Judge and Stanton are so hot that no one really seems to talk about it. So luckily for him, he's having a little bit of a down stretch the last couple of weeks. No home runs after that great start. He had that 3-home run game, but Judge and Stanton have certainly picked up the load.
Yeah, but here's the thing. There's an ebb and flow. It's a long season. I think it's unrealistic to think that Stanton and Judge are going to stay this great all season long. And so, you know, maybe that's exactly what this team needs in that clubhouse where, let's say, you know, Stanton and Judge get cold, Rizzo once again lights it up again. That's what's really important, and that's what needs to happen, especially when you look across Major League Baseball and teams that do well. There is an ebb and flow to a season in regard to who's hitting well certain months. Okay, this guy's gotten cold, but this other player stepped up. It's exactly what the Yankees need. And of course, you know, there's always the trade deadline. If the Yankees continue to play as well as they do, you know, do they, prior to the trade deadline, do they even go after, you know, another arm to even make this rotation even better as they head into October? 800-919-3776. We're going to take a quick break. We come back. David Lennon from Newsday joins us next. We'll continue to talk Major League Baseball. Yankees, Mets unfortunately lose to Seattle yesterday, but they're back at it today. Bassett is taking on Seattle.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
Upset a few Jets fans with my Jets schedule analysis.
Hater.
I'm not a hater. I just, the NFL did them no justice by giving them all 4 AFC North opponents Are you kidding me?
Yeah, but the Browns are not going to have their quarterback.
We don't know that. That hasn't been confirmed yet. We're speculating. We're assuming.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't think there's anyone who actually believes Deshaun Watson is going to start the season as the quarterback of the Browns. So let's just operate under those circumstances. I would argue that the best time to play the Ravens, if we expect the Ravens to be the Baltimore Ravens, like a playoff team with Lamar Jackson, an MVP quarterback, if we expect them to be good this season, I would argue the best time to play them would be week one, before they get into a groove, before they get going.
But you're not worried with the fact of how many young players you're going to have on your roster?
Of course, I'm worried.
Against that team, against that offense, that defense?
It's a tough game regardless. And I'm not even saying that the Jets should win this game or will win this game. I'm saying that if there's any time to play a team like Baltimore, it would be right off the bat, early, where everyone's still trying to get their feet underneath them.
But what you're assuming is you're thinking like Baltimore is not going to be rolling on all cylinders. What I'm thinking is you've got a lot of young guys that are going to be taking on Lamar Jackson and that Baltimore Ravens offense, let alone that defense, for the first time. That's your introduction to the league.
I get it, but if we see fluky things happen so often in week one, I mean, last year, let's go back, the Packers got smoked by, it was the Saints, right? It was one of the worst games Aaron Rodgers has ever played, and everyone overreacted to it, and then they went on to win, to get the one seed in the NFC. So I'm just saying, week one, we see craziness happen. So that would be the week I would want to play a team like Baltimore. And I'm not saying they're going to win it, but if there is a place for that game, I would say it's week one. At Cleveland, they don't have a quarterback. Cincinnati, they beat them last year, but I think, if I remember correctly, the Bengals were playing a tough team the week after the Jets, and I just feel like that was a performance. They just looked past them. And then Pittsburgh, what's their quarterback situation?
It's going to be Trubisky.
Yeah, Trubisky's going to start, and he's not good.
I disagree.
You think Trubisky's a good quarterback?
I think he's a very good quarterback.
So why did his team get rid of him?
They didn't get rid of him. He was a backup. He wants to start.
He was drafted by Chicago.
Right. He played behind a horrible offensive line. Horrible. I do like Foxy, but did not have a great offensive coordinator. Very similar to Daniel Jones. I know Giants fans have had it with Daniel Jones. Be careful what you wish for.
I don't know.
I think his skill set, you can't find in around the NFL. And, he's been bad. He's been sold a bag of lemons since he arrived here. And he might be damaged. There might not be a return from this. But
call me crazy. I don't know that organizations are just getting rid of very good quarterbacks, especially with it being so hard to find. Mitch Trubisky, I've never watched him and thought he was a really good quarterback, and neither did the Bears. So I don't know that he's going to go to Pittsburgh and perform well. And I don't think that they know that, which is why they drafted a quarterback as well. The first four games tough, but can you go 2-2? Not impossible. 0-9, I think, is bizarro world.
So what you're saying is you think they could possibly beat Baltimore week one. You think they could possibly beat Cincinnati.
No, I don't think they're going to beat Cincinnati. I say that they're probably going to lose the home games to the Ravens and Bengals, but I think they can absolutely beat Cleveland and Pittsburgh.
Let's go to our calls. 800-919-3776. Joe's calling him from Staten Island. Joe, welcome in.
Hi, good afternoon. How you doing? The 0-9 thing, I understand, but I still see the first nine games. They possibly can win five games there. They're not going to win against Baltimore. I understand that. The Browns, depends on Watson, but then again, he still has to learn a new playbook. That might slow him down a little bit. I see that as a win. I see the Bengals as a win. Only if they bring back the defensive tackle that was in the building for 2 days, I think that can help definitely help them win that game.
Here's the thing. Cincinnati went to the Super Bowl this year.
I understand that, but they played them really tough and they won. That's got to be something in there. something's got to click with Wilson. This is the second year in the same playbook, and they added a running back. With Pittsburgh, that's tough. I mean, I see that close win. Dolphins, I mean, I understand what the Dolphins are doing, but I see them as very equally team. I mean, besides one more receiver being great, the next five games, the Patriots might be a win there, I think, maybe. So that's what I have as my first nine wins. They're going to beat the Bears, and they're going to beat Seattle, and they're going to beat the Jaguars. So I say eight wins, the best, or nine wins if they try really hard. But that's where I go over there. I mean, Joe Douglas has done great things this offseason. The 0-9, I would say if Joe Douglas would have done nothing, like he just added just one or two players, great. But he's done great things for this team this offseason. So something's got to click.
Joe, thanks for the phone call. Appreciate it. Let's go to Hammer in the Bronx. Hammer, you're up.
Anita. One of my favorite ESPN Radio New York personalities. I love you to death. But I told you a few months back that Derek Carr was not going anywhere. Did I not?
You did.
I want to say right now, I looked at the schedule. We did a breakdown of the schedule on my podcast, Hammer's House on YouTube. And I'm looking at it right now. We're probably going to be 13-4, 12-5 team. I think we split the division matchups. And I think the only other teams that we potentially lose to, and it hurts for me to say this because I'm supposed to be out there for this game, is going to be the Thursday night matchup against the Rams and probably against the Colts. So that might be a close game. But I think with everything we have now, the new front office, Josh McDaniels, a competent head coach when it comes to red zone offense, Devontae Adams and the rest of the weapons on offense and defense, I think this team is potentially a Super Bowl contender, but I still think we're pieces away. I believe that we're a number one corner and a veteran right tackle away from being a Super Bowl champion.
Yeah, I just and I appreciate the phone call. I just, you know, this is arguably the most competitive division in the NFL now, especially with Russell Wilson in Denver and what the Chargers have been able to do in free agency on the defensive side of the ball. Watch out. The Chargers are going to be a force.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
Talking all things about the NFL schedule that came out. Not really optimistic in regard to the schedule for the Jets. Especially, again, you're talking about a minimum of 10, if not possibly 13 players that will be starting for the Jets that are either a rookie or in their second year. So, you know, I think the NFL could have been a little bit more kind into giving them not the entire AFC North to start the season the first 4 weeks. Let's go to Steve, calling in from Mohegan Lake. Steve, welcome in. How you doing?
Good, Anita. How are you? I wanted to call in and talk about Mitch Trubisky. I strongly disagree. I think he's a bad quarterback, and I think Dable and Schoen both have to agree with that point. Since they had a full year of him in Buffalo, they opted not to extend Daniel Jones on that fifth-year option, and they still didn't want to bring him in.
That's not true. They tried to bring him in. He wants to start.
Yeah,
that's why he went to Pittsburgh.
If he is significantly better than Daniel Jones, which it sounds like that's the argument you're making, then why wouldn't you just cut Daniel Jones?
I didn't say that. Steve, I didn't say that he's better than Daniel Jones. Those words did not come out of my mouth. What I'm telling you is that Dable would have loved for Trubisky to come here. The reason that he didn't come here is because he can't start. And you heard what ownership had to say. They are committed to giving Daniel Jones, you have to, based on where the Giants drafted Daniel Jones. And that draft capital that they spent on him, the Giants have to see what they have in Daniel Jones.
Why wouldn't you pick up the fifth-year chief if you had any confidence in him?
In Daniel Jones? I don't think it's that they don't have confidence in him. I think there's some question marks about his health. And from what I understand, that's why they didn't pick up the fifth-year option. I would have picked it. I think it's a bargain at $20 million, personally.
Agreed.
But yeah, I do. For somebody of his caliber, yeah. Daniel Jones could win football games for you.
I guess we'll agree to disagree there. Have a good one, Anita. I hope you feel better.
You got it. I hope people realize this is Daniel Jones is on his fifth head coach in 4 years, going all the way back to Duke. So first of all, marinating that, there's been no consistency for him at all. He's played behind a horrible offensive line his entire tenure here with the Jets, with the Giants. Saquon Barkley has been injured the majority of his time here with the Giants. So it's not like Saquon Barkley has been able to help establish a frightening rushing attack that's going to keep defenses honest and respect Saquon Barkley, allowing Daniel Jones a little bit of wiggle room. And his wide receiving core has been subpar. Galladay was a huge disaster last year. Kadarius Toney, huge disaster last year. Sterling Shepard can't stay healthy. Evan Ingram can't catch a ball to save his life. So we're going to sit here and we're just going to immediately just say, Daniel Jones sucks. He's horrible. Giants need to move on. With that sample size of BS, I mean, you know, a part of me feels like, and again, listen, I don't know. Daniel Jones very well could be so damaged at this point that there's no return, right? We saw it with David Carr, okay, in Houston, if you recall, when the Texans drafted him. You know, there's an injury. To me, the biggest red flag when it comes to Daniel Jones is injury. Can he stay healthy for 17 games? He hasn't proved that he can. And you need to do that in the NFL, especially as a quarterback. So for me, the biggest red flag with Daniel Jones is health. But I think it would be very unfair of anyone to sit here and say Daniel Jones is a bad quarterback based on what he's been working with, which is next to nothing. And I'm not sitting here telling you that Daniel Jones is a great quarterback. What I'm telling you is I don't know. We don't know. Because he has not been given an opportunity to perform under the right conditions. Okay? I mean, you know, everybody likes to appoint Tom Brady the greatest of all time. What happens when Tom Brady has less than 2 seconds to get the ball out of his hands? He's on his back and he's bitching and complaining to his offensive line. So we don't know what time it is with Daniel Jones. We just don't. And I'm going to go one step further. I don't know if this is the year that we will find out. I don't think the Giants are going to win more than 7 games.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
So is the fan base going to look at this season and say, well, another under 500 season, Daniel Jones needs to go? I mean, you know, what if Kadarius Toney can't stay on the field? What if Galladay is a head case? Granted, you like what you've seen, what they've done with the offensive line. The defense has gotten better, but they just had to cut Bradbury. How's this secondary going to be able to compete in a very aggressive Wink Martindale blitz happy defense in that division? So a part of me wishes that Daniel Jones would go to another team and get a new lease on life and a new opportunity somewhere else. Part of me feels that's what he needs. Really. Let's go to Anthony calling in from a mail truck. Anthony, you're up.
Anita, how you doing?
I've been better, boo, but what you got?
So I usually agree with you on most things, and this take on Daniel Jones is horrendous. I cannot tell you how bad of a quarterback he is.
Why?
He's a turnover machine.
Okay, time out. Let's go. Anthony, let's go one by one. Let's go one by one. You say he's a turnover machine. You know why he's a turnover machine? Because he has no protection. He has less than 2 seconds to get the ball at. And because there's so much criticism, he's trying to do too much. He's not laying down. when he should, because he's trying to make chicken salad out of chicken poop. And that now that's on him. But the pressure is coming because he has no offensive line. If you go back and you look at all the fumbles, if you look at all the fumbles in Daniel Jones's career, it's because of a breakdown in protection in less than 3 seconds. Okay, yeah, number two, go ahead. Go ahead.
You look at some of these other quarterbacks in the league, you know, with bad offensive lines, and you know they make it, you know, happen. They win games. He cannot win games in the NFL. I feel like him coming out of Duke. Well, who was the last quarterback? And honestly, I don't even know who was the last quarterback to come out of Duke that was remotely good. You know, I don't.
I mean, Anthony, I don't, and I appreciate the phone call. I don't have that answer for you. I don't know. And again, I'm not sitting here telling you that Daniel Jones is the end all be all. What I'm telling you is we don't know.
Can I ask you a question? If in year four, we still don't know about a quarterback, doesn't that mean we actually know, but we're just afraid to admit it? Because then it puts us in a precarious situation, and now we have to reset. And by we, I mean the Giants organization. We still have the same question marks about Daniel Jones that we had in year one, and it's now year four. I think we know already, Anita. I think we know.
Okay, well, maybe you do. I still think there's, you know, give the young man an offensive line, give him a rushing attack. Give him some weapons on offense to throw to that aren't injured, that aren't head cases, that actually catch passes.
So give him the perfect situation, and then he can find his way to be.
No one has the perfect situation, Ty. But all three levels, he's been screwed. All three levels, horrible offensive line, no rushing attack, no weapons to throw to. All three negative. He doesn't have one positive. Where's his positive? He doesn't have it.
He also can't stay healthy, and he's a turnover machine.
That's a big concern. Yeah, but when you are trying to do too much, and again, that is on him. But when the criticism is there, and you're trying, oh man, I gotta win. I'm gonna get ripped. We lose, I'm gonna get ripped on sports talk radio tomorrow.
Yeah, that's part of being an NFL quarterback. That's not like unique to Daniel Jones.
But you tend to push too hard then when you shouldn't.
If a quarterback can't handle the pressure of performing to the point where he's nervous about him being criticized on sports talk radio, then he doesn't need to be an NFL quarterback, especially in New York. Like if that's part of what you're worried about with a quarterback,
he's only human. We would all feel that pressure that this is a Giants organization that goes out, drafts him as high as they did. I was shocked when the draft pick was put in, just like a number of other Giants fans were. So part of this, the onus is on the Giants. Like the Giants totally screwed this kid big time because in all honesty, he should have gone late in the first, if not in the second. Then this pressure wouldn't be as immense, number one. And number two, you draft him, and then you don't build around him properly. So,
but the Giants thought he was their guy, which is why they took him number six. If you think he's your guy, then you don't wait until the second round to take him. You just take him whenever you can.
I understand, but my point is a lot of the pressure that is on him is because of where he was selected. I don't think that he would have this much pressure if he was selected towards the bottom of the first, if he was the fifth or sixth or seventh quarterback taken. I don't think he'd feel this type of pressure.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
Joe, welcome in. How you doing?
Hey, Anita, thanks for having me on. It's a gloomy Saturday, but a lot of action happening all over the place. I know everybody's talking about all these game sevens all over the place.
Yeah, it's nuts. Why don't we start with some Major League Baseball? One of my favorite plays yesterday was Yankees over 4.5 team total runs, and I think they put up six even like before the fifth, so I won that pretty easily. You've got both the Yankees and the Mets going at it tonight. First pitch is at 7:10. Montgomery going up against Keuchel. Keuchel has not performed well against the Yankees in years past. And then, of course, you've got the Mets. Chris Bassitt on the bump going up against Kirby at home hosting Seattle. Any play in these two games?
Yeah, when you take a look at the Yankees, what could you say about them? I mean, right now they have the best record in baseball. They've won five in a row, but no one's talking about the Houston Astros. Watch out for the Astros. They've won 11 in a row, and I'm curious to see once the Yankees get into the meat of the schedule. They've had a very favorable schedule, and with the White Sox being all banged up right now, you know, when you look at Keuchel and Montgomery, you know, Montgomery doesn't have a win. He's pitched very well this season. However, I am taking the White Sox in this game here. I'm taking the dog in this game here. I know everyone's going to be like, oh, how could you bet against the Yankees, the hottest team in baseball, the team with the best record? But I think that the White Sox here, they have been competitive in the first game of the series. You know, it was tied in the seventh inning before the Yanks went on an explosion. I think that Keuchel will keep this game respectable, and I'm expecting the White Sox to win here in this game here. Keuchel's 2-3 with a 6.86 ERA, and we know the Yankees are the best team in baseball, but I'm taking the White Sox in this game.
Interesting. We've got three hockey games. The first one, the puck drops at 4:37 p.m., and that's the Bruins going up against the Hurricanes. Of course, the Lightning and the Maple Leafs, and then the Kings and the Oilers. Any NHL plays today?
Yeah, it's interesting, Anita. We take a look at this Tampa-Toronto Maple Leafs game. It's ironic because they're both playing each other in hockey, and they're also playing each other in baseball today. So, you know, you got the Tampa Bay Lightning, the two-time defending champs, and, you know, you're going up against Toronto, and Toronto has a history of choking in these games, and Tampa Bay always has a history of playing well. And the line at Bet Rivers right now has the Maple Leafs favored here, minus 127. You can get back 110 with Tampa. The total need in this game is at 6.5, and I know that most of the games have gone over in this series except for game one where Toronto won 5-0, but most of these games have gone high scoring. The last game they played, game six, Tampa won 4-3 on Thursday. The winning game prior to that was 4-3 as well. I think this total here is high, and I'm going to give you a stat here. This goalie for Tampa, Andrei Vasilevsky, in his last five series where he has had an opportunity, where Tampa's had an opportunity to close out the series, he has given up zero goals in the last five times that Tampa has had a chance to close out the series. Obviously, it's game seven. It's do or die. The winner moves on. The total in this game is at 6.5. I'm expecting a low-scoring affair between Tampa and Toronto. Game seven, anything could happen. I like the total in this game to go under the total, under 6.5 goals between Tampa and Toronto in the NHL.
And you could get that at minus 120, correct? At Bet Rivers?
Yes. At Bet Rivers right now, the under is at minus 120, 6.5 goals. And as I said, game one went under, every other game went over. And ironically, a lot of these NHL games all of a sudden are all a lot of high-scoring games here. But I think this one here with the game seven, there's going to be so much pressure, very very little room for error. So I like to total this game under with Vasilevsky. He's one of the best goalies in the NHL, if not the best. You got the two-time defending world champions. You know, so I'm going with the under and expecting a low-scoring affair.
You've got the Rangers, Game 7, going up against the Penguins. There's some reports out there that Sidney Crosby was able to practice today, expecting him to make the trip. Not sure if he will play or not, but obviously that's a factor in assessing that matchup, Game 7 at the Garden. Any play there for the Rangers and Penguins tomorrow?
Yeah, I mean, the last time we've had a Game 7, Anita, at the Garden, it's been a long time. It's 2015 since we've had a Game 7. And, you know, the Rangers just, you know, keep coming back. And, you know, Crosby, obviously, he's been out for a game and a half. And the Rangers have done well. And, you know, I think the Rangers have to be very fortunate that Crosby hasn't been playing, because I think the series would be over if Crosby was playing. I know a lot of Ranger fans don't want to hear that. But the Rangers really haven't played their best hockey in this series. And neither has the goalie, Igor Shesterkin. So I think the total in this game here is at 6.5. Every game in this series has gone over. okay? The Rangers are minus 140 in this game here. You know, a lot's going to depend on whether Crosby plays or not. If Crosby does not play, I would lay the 140. And obviously, we're not going to know until tomorrow. Right now, it's 50-50 if he's playing. My sources tell me that if he does play, it's going to be, you know, suspect if he's going to be 100% and how fragile he's going to be with the concussion issue that he has. So my recommendation is to go over this game, over 6.5 goals. Every game in this series between the Penguins and Rangers have gone over. Six straight overs. But pay attention to see if Crosby is not in the lineup. If Crosby is not in the lineup, I would like the Rangers to advance to the second round.
So you get the over 6.5 goals at pretty much even money, plus 105.
Yeah, and that's interesting because a lot of the times, Anita, I talked about it on my show, a lot of times people will see totals, and I've had a few people ask me, hey, what is minus? Or sometimes when you're playing overs and unders, there's juice involved with it, and you have to be careful because sometimes you have to put a little bit more juice up. But in this situation, on the over, it is at 6.5, and it's pretty much minus 105, which would be even money.
We've got some NBA action going at it with the Bucks and the Celtics, Mavs and Suns, Game 7. Right now, the Celtics back at home tomorrow, minus 5, favored by 5, over-unders at 206.5. Suns back at home, and you know the home court advantage has been huge in that matchup between the Suns and the Mavs. Who's ever won at home, they've won by 7 or more points, and right now the Suns are favored by 6.5, so very interesting there. The over-unders at 205. Any plays in these NBA games?
Yeah, tomorrow, Game 7, another defending champion that's on the road. It has to win on the road here. You know, we talked about the, with Tampa in the NHL, but we also have the Milwaukee Bucks, the defending champs, on the road. And Anita, home team, it really doesn't matter here. Milwaukee won Game 1 and won 5. The visiting team has won 4 of the first 6 games here, okay? And the line at Bet Rivers right now is a solid 5 for Boston. The total game is at 206.5. I have to take the points in a Game 7. I think it's going to be a tight defensive game. But, you know, whenever you got Giannis, you know, you had 44 points. I know they didn't win. It would have been – but I think that Milwaukee being the defending champs and with the home stadium having no factor at all with 4 of the first 6 visiting teams winning, I'm going to take the points in this game here in what I expect to be a lower scoring game than the total is at 206.5. But my official play on this game is Milwaukee. As far as the Dallas Phoenix game here, what could you say, Anita? I mean, Chris Paul is 37 years old. He's already played in 8 Game 7s, okay? Booker, this is his first Game 7. You know, I'd love to see Dallas win only because, you know, Phoenix, I felt that they were a little overrated throughout most of the season, and finally they're playing into the series. Nobody expected them to be in a Game 7, and as you mentioned, every game in this series has been decided by 7 or more points here. So, in this game here, I'm going with the Mavericks. I'm taking the dog. I'm going to buy the half point. I'm taking Dallas plus 7. I'm looking to get 7 there, and it might even surface tomorrow. Right now, the line at Bet Rivers has Phoenix favored by 6.5, but everybody I've talked to is on the Suns in this game here. And Chris Paul, like I said, hasn't played well in this series, and his age always is a factor. We saw it last year against Milwaukee, how he completely fell apart in that series. And as the series go along, you're going to see more issues. But I like Dallas, and I'm looking to take 7. Whenever you have a Game 7, Anita, you know, anything could happen. The pressure's on. You know, Phoenix is overwhelming favorite. They're number one seed, best record, etc. But, you know, Dallas, the pressure's on Phoenix. I'm taking the dog plus 7.
Belmont, you got race number 5. Post time is at about 23 minutes. I like the 3-horse Repo Rocks as well as the 1-horse Chateau, and I'm going to throw in the 4-horse Answer In. Are you keeping an eye on what's going on?
Yeah, I know you get some good
too?
Information. You have some good contacts, so you have an advantage over me with these horses here, especially at Belmont. But I love some of the tips I get from you. They do really well. But, you know, what's more interesting, Anita, is that, Rich Strike is not going to be running in the Preakness. I know we'll talk about that next week on the show. He's going to be running in the Belmont Stakes in 3 weeks, so I was a little bit disappointed. But, you know, no one's talking about him at all. But, next week's the Preakness here. Basically, in this fifth race here at Belmont, the horse I was looking looking at here was Dylan Davis with Clement Horse here. He's a little bit of a chalk there at 5-2. But next week, I'm curious to see what happens. You know, Rich Strike not running, so we'll have to wait to see him run in the Belmont Stakes, and that was something else that. And I like that's what I like about horse racing. You don't have to bet a lot to win a lot of money. I think if you did a dollar try box, which was like $6, you could have made $14,000. I posted it on my Instagram and Twitter just to show people that you could bet small and win big.
Again, he's Joe Wiz. Joe, let them know when and how they could listen to your show.
Thanks. I'm on Friday nights at midnight, and of course Saturday mornings at 8 a.m. And come football season, we'll be on Sunday mornings as well. And they can follow me on Instagram or Twitter. On Twitter, I put out free picks every day. Joe Wiz Sports. I love it, Anita. I put out free picks all the time. And you know, it's amazing. Everyone's like, hey, Wiz, you know, we're just going to listen to you on Anita and get all your free picks instead of calling you up. And I'm like, all right, that's fine. I love to give out free winners, and hopefully we can make people money. It's an exciting time of the year, and you know, with legal sports betting just being a few months old now in New York, and with the hot golf going on and opportunities to make money.
Joe, appreciate you, my friend. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. Good luck.
Thank you.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.